StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, bringing you another startup interview today here. Wherever you're watching this or listening to this, maybe on our podcast, on our YouTube blog, or even on our internet radio station, startup.radio, you can go down here in the show notes and search for the interview with Max from Monta, or find here a link to our respective blog posts. I've already mentioned, you are Max and you're from Monta. Welcome.
Thank you, Joe. Happy to be here. Excited to tell a bit more about our story.
That's totally my pleasure. First, we should clear out that Monta is actually a company headquartered in lovely Copenhagen in Denmark, right?
That's correct. Copenhagen, Denmark.
Exactly. And so, I think we should justify that you guys are also pretty active in Germany. Plus, you are a German guy. That's why you guys are in the interview. Plus, our audience knows that from time to time, we do a circle around Germany and have some interesting startups from neighboring countries. And you guys are totally interesting. According to Crunchbase, you raised more than $130 million in funding.
Yes,
and your last funding announcement was in January 2024 with $80 million. That's close to $88 million, so 80 million euros. And you provide software infrastructure for charging stations. And we'll get into all of that, your asset light approach, pretty soon. But first, let's talk a little bit about the person who is sitting here and is my interview guest. Can you introduce yourself just a little bit and then we hop a little bit through your CV and have a look what you learned and what you've done before you became the COO of Monta?
Absolutely. Yes, I'm Max. I'm originally from Berlin, so born and raised in that city. I am now a family father with a wife and two kids living in Copenhagen, where family life is very comfortable and nice, and I bike every day. But before that, I spent quite a bit of time trying out my feet or my footing in startup land. So I started a bunch of companies in Berlin after I'd studied geography, studied in the States for a while. And those startups, some of them really went belly up fast and some of them did pretty well. I was fortunate enough to start a company together with Rocket Internet, which was in the food delivery space. We did a farm to table concept here, which we actually sold to a French competitor. I spent some time at the Boston Consulting Group in between, and then started again. And that there was a bunch of different things, but the thing that that is maybe memorable and still survives is a passion for workplaces. If you look for the Ufer in Berlin, you will find something that you can still use for your day-to-day office needs or for your workshop needs. So I've dabbled in a lot of things, but I think the thing that always pulled through for me was that I was super fascinated by what technology can do. So the first thing I started right out of school was a software startup trying to help scientists. It failed grandiosely, but it was kind of my first touch point with what can technology do to help, to help different tasks and create, business opportunities for people, but most importantly, make lives easier for people who are trying to achieve something. There was not only software, there was also technology in the food space, there was technology in workspace enablement. So how can you make room bookings easier, et cetera, pp. But it was also that thing, what can you do to make a task easier and maybe a bit more efficient for people? Fascinated me for most of my life.
I see. And I've also seen that you not only studied at Freie University of Berlin, but you also attended Dartmouth as a Fulbright scholar. How was studying at Dartmouth, and how is Hanover in New Hampshire?
It's very small. So it's in the middle of the woods in New Hampshire. It's I think when the semester is on or the term is on, I think it's over 50% students. So it's a couple thousand people who just left high school trying their feet in higher education. So it's a very American experience with a big Greek scene, so fraternities, sororities. But also, I would say a place for academic excellence. So it was a great year I spent there, and it was a lot of fun. Kind of, going from the Freie Universität in Berlin, which is, it's a campus in a big city, and in Berlin, as a student, it's easy to get lost, to going to a place where it's gravel pathways and the picture perfect US college situation with, red brick buildings and, New England romantic setting. And yeah, it's an exciting, I think, step for somebody who grew up in Berlin and then going out into the wide US American world there and figuring out that beer pong is something, that you learn at college.
And cake stands. Yes, I was the unofficial fraternity master in cake stands. I know how this student life goes. What I found pretty interesting in you is you actually have not been a business major, an engineer, or a software developer, so computer scientist, but you actually studied geography. What drew you to geography? Did you always like maps?
That's a great question. So what drew me to that? So coming out of high school, like going very deep down into history here, coming out of high school, I was a little bit, the stereotypical, I guess. I was decent in school, but I didn't really know what to do, type. So I went to some information, seminars that the universities in Berlin held. And the geography one was by far the most entertaining, because it was a very, very good professor, very good public speaker, who painted this picture of, everything ties together in space. So if you understand space, you probably understand a lot about people, about society, about business, and you get to do really long field trips. So I was lucky to, do a very big field trip into Mongolia and a big field trip into the Sahara. So I kind of combined those two things, right? A curiosity for understanding the things that tie what we do and what makes us do things as people together by looking at, the geography of things and traveling. So that's how I picked geography. It served me well, but sadly, but also honestly, I do very little of what I learned during my studies has any impact on what I do today.
Sorry, half joking question. Do you still get lost?
I never get lost.
That is good. Before we get a little bit into Monta, as you said, you relocated with your family to Copenhagen. How is Copenhagen, and can you tell us what we discussed before we got into this interview, the story with the Christmas beer?
Yes, the J date. The J day, actually. So we moved to Copenhagen actually for my wife's job during the pandemic. So it was full lockdown in Berlin, so you were not allowed to go outside almost. And my wife got an opportunity to work out of Copenhagen. And at the time, I was in a position where I was basically alone all the time, seeing my teammates online only. So it was an easy call for me to make and say, wait, I might as well see them online from Copenhagen and try that. you know, once we made the call, we actually, I actually decided to look for something new in Copenhagen, which in the end led to Monta. But overall, we made the decision for my wife's job, and because we knew the city and we knew, you know, it's a very family-friendly place, and we had one kid at the time, and now the second one joined the family just a couple months back. So it's been proven a good choice. We really enjoy it here. It's much more quiet, less adventurous, I guess you could say, than Berlin. But you know, it's an extremely high quality of life, and you know, it's a good international spot here, very close to everything else in Europe, as I guess Europe is. And yeah, Denmark has, you know, a lot of famous breweries, right? Tuborg, Carlsberg, etc. And at some point, they came up with this concept of creating flavored beer for the Christmas time. What they then did is they all came together and said, let's turn it into something that we turn into a campaign and make it something that people, you know, celebrate. And then they called it the J Day. So the Jule, I'm butchering the Danish language here. Juleøl, I think, day. So Juleøl is Christmas beer. And that's the day when it's launched. And that's the only time of the year you can get that. So that day and the next 3 weeks. And it's a huge thing. Crowds gather around the streets of Copenhagen and swarm the pubs to get a taste of that beer. I'm German, so I'm super biased when it comes to beer. It's pretty weird. Yeah.
Before we get serious again, what are some of the weird flavors there?
So the Christmas beer is always kind of in this direction of Christmas candy. So, you know, it's kind of strange, right? It has this, what's called in German, it's called Lebkuchen. So you have that stuff in there. Yeah, gingerbread, you have these things in there. It's an acquired taste, I have to say, right?
So that means in the beginning it tastes pretty awful, but then you get used to it. Okay, that's a very nice formulation, an acquired taste. Like that one. Let us get a little bit more into Monta. First, I was of the impression that you got headhunted for Monta, but apparently you relocated to Copenhagen and found Monta. But Monta was already around before you joined as COO. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the company? What idea brought it to life? What problem brought it to life?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So Kasper, he's our CEO and one of the two founders. He was an early EV adopter, so I think he bought a Tesla in 2017 or so. And street charging, he lives in the city. So street charging at that point in Copenhagen was pretty rare. So, you know, you had to make do with whatever was possible. But then more and more infrastructure was rolled out, so more and more charge points were rolled out. And at some point in, I think, 2020, a new operator launched in the area where he lived. And that operator said, we're going to improve it all. We're going to change the world of charging. You get an app and you can just, it will be super easy and fantastic. So he tried that app and conclusion was, okay, it's really bad. You know, why would anybody claim this? Now, chance has it, Kasper is a software engineer and he was running an agency building apps. So he called that company and said, guys, should we talk? I can help you turn this into a great product. They didn't take that offer. And that's essentially how Monta got started.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are providing software for charging stations. I've heard you when I was preparing our interview, I heard a few other podcasts and you said something like hardware is cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the way you can kind of think of it is the hardware is a components business, right? So a charge point is a pretty simple piece of hardware. You have some casing, you have a fuse box, you have a controller, you have a plug, and then you have a charge point. So something that you can put up in your garage or in your driveway, or something that you put up in street parking or in parking on supermarkets, etc. There are also the fast chargers, which are a bit more complex, but in essence, also fairly simple technology. So that hardware can be manufactured or combined by pretty much every business that has some experience in electronics manufacturing. So that means there's a lot of vendors out there that sell this type of hardware. So in Germany right now, or in Europe right now, you can buy thousands of different models of these charge points. So it's a very fragmented market. They all do the job somehow, you know, some better than others. But in the end, you will be able to charge your car on all of them. So this is a market that will be driven to fairly low prices, you know, as it progresses and as it advances. And it's going to be a hardware market where you will be sitting on small margins, because you're providing a good that, you know, will have a very high volume as it's being installed out there. It's if you look for innovation in that space, you know, you're probably looking at process optimization and supply chain optimization. So cost is the thing. There's a few technological things that you can still do here, bidirectional charging, etc. But I think that's another category. But for the basic charge point that's being installed right now, there's probably a very predictable model where that will go. So when we thought about kind of how can we add value here and how can we, you know, improve user experience in charging, we thought about how can we make this a hardware agnostic thing, that's also combined with the experiences and, you know, skills that we have had in the founding team and that we have in the company now. Software was kind of where we ended, I think we're fairly happy about that.
You talk about making it hardware agnostic. What do you actually do? Is it an app for the user who can charge their stations? Is it a platform matching different parties? Can you tell us a little bit more about the business model and what party are you actually connecting?
Absolutely. It's a bit of all of those points. So this fragmented world of hardware out there, it serves a very important purpose. It enables mobility, right? So everybody of us, we all want to be mobile. The delivery fleets that make sure that we get our food and, you know, get the goods that we need to stay mobile. Eventually, they will be electrified. So this interface needs to be accessible by everybody, usable by everybody, needs to be reliable, needs to be safe. And because it's fragmented between the thousands of different models and it's decentralized because it's set up all over the place, achieving those things, accessibility, reliability, safety, is something that you can probably best do with a software platform that runs on all of these, right? So that combines this fragmented, decentralized hardware IoT setup. And that's what we're building. We're building a software that lets you, an organization, a company, a city, run tens of thousands of different charge points of different models and build in different geographies and different locations for different use cases. So charging at your home, charging at the local supermarket, or charging at the highway fast charger in one system. We build the back end that kind of controls the quality of the interface into this charging infrastructure, we can also influence the charging experience, so the quality of the charging experience that the end customer in the end has best in this whole ecosystem. So on the other end of it, so there's the business end of it. It's a management platform that lets you manage thousands of charge points. There is an app that lets you as a driver charge anywhere.
I see. You just talked about IoT. Would you say that you're an IoT SaaS company?
You could say so, right? So all of the charge points are connected devices, right? They're all online, which is how we control them and interact with them. That's also how users or drivers connect with them. And our main business model is software as a service. So there is a monthly fee per connected charge point that we invoice our business customers. Private customers can do this for free.
Mm-hmm. I see, and you convinced quite a lot of interesting investors, Quantum Light, Greenpoint Partners, Headline VC, how do you pronounce it? Ainu from Berlin?
Yeah. Ainu, yes.
Creatom from Stockholm, yeah. Danish Investors Export and Investment Fund, Energize Capital from Chicago, and Bifounders also from Denmark. You raised 80 million euros. And in 2023, a lot of startups died, and you did such a massive fundraising. Can you explain to us a little bit about how the market went, meaning in favor of you, your underlying business, and on the other hand, how you could communicate this with the investors who, despite having apparently many startups in their portfolio dying, still invest newly in you when there's currently a downturn in funding?
I'll do my best. I think the most important.
I can't ask for more. Totally fine.
Yes, I think the most important part here is hopefully and probably that we actually managed to perform very well in this market environment. So we grew in 2023 six or sevenfold to a very significant revenue, and that, to put that into perspective, 2023 is the third year of our existence, right? So we went live with the app in February 2021. So I think what we had on our side was momentum and product market fit, and we managed to sell even in a market that that was coming under some hardship, especially when it comes to buying new software solutions. The second element here is that our market in particular, so electrification and solutions for electric vehicles, is actually a booming market. So it's growing very strongly. I think the overall, the market globally, I think the CAGR, so compound annual growth rate, is over 35%, which is incredibly high, right? And in markets in Western Europe, it's a lot higher even. So I think we're sitting on those two things, right? So we have a market that is a bit resistant to the macro trends, right? So maybe actually a bit of a reaction to the macro trends. So energy uncertainty, and now you want to switch around how you power your mobility and how you think about energy in general, is a driving factor for us. Of course, doing something that is more sustainable is a driving factor for us, and that I think plays into a lot of things. So customer sentiment towards greener choices and a different way of thinking about CO2 footprint is an element, but next to that, I think there is also an element of excitement about a new technology. And electric motor is not a new technology, but it's the first time that you actually see it on the roads, and you can feel that it's more powerful. It costs less in upkeep, and it's a bit of a different way of experiencing mobility, right? So those things, we performed really well. We have a great product that sells. Our market is growing against macro trends, and we have customer sentiment on our side. People are excited about the technology. I think those things really were the driving factors here. And then VCs do what they do, right? They invest in a downturn, because that's when the market winners are hopefully shaped. So they take a bet on being exposed to this mega trend, electrification, and we convinced some really great investors to take that bet with us. So I think that's the long and short of it. Yes,
basically that's always the story, right? So you have an amazing product, you have a market that is going for you, plus you obviously have to have a talented management team, otherwise this all wouldn't come together. So I do believe there are some of the really, really essential ingredients there. We've been talking about what you guys are doing, what your and your successful fundraising. So can we go a little bit into the outlook? What you guys want to do with all the money, beside buying a game console and kicker for your office.
Yes, yes, we did buy an air hockey table. I have to admit that, right? what are we going to do? So we are now active in Europe as of today, in all major markets. We have, I think, 6 offices in Europe. So we think Europe is the most exciting place for electrification right now. And that's also, incidentally, super exciting for us because a technology trend that finally, doesn't come out of the Silicon Valley, but actually emerges here. It's also one of the things that we really... That really gets us going, right? But nonetheless, one of the big things that we're going to do is we're going to go to the US. So we're going to open an office this year because the market is, while not as advanced as Europe, with some exceptions, California, you could say, is maybe at the same stage as Germany is, but there's not a single state in North America or country or state in the US that is where Denmark or Sweden or Norway are, for example, right? So there's a lot of technology transfer that we can bring to the US that, makes our product very exciting to the local scene and to local electrification businesses. So that's one of the big things. And then apart from geographic expansion, there's some technological elements that we think we can bring to the table, which are very exciting. I think whoever's into electrification has heard of vehicle-to-grid before. I'll quickly explain that. It essentially means taking the battery of your car, or any battery, really, that is on a couple of wheels, and using that to feed energy back into the grid. So not just taking it in and storing it to be mobile, but rather using that energy to power your house, your apartment block, or thousands of vehicles powering, a city when the wind turbines are not going, right?
So that is basically one of the solutions, that renewable energy is not static, but it goes in waves, like with the sun, with the wind, and so on and so forth. And basically, that is one of the approaches, using the batteries of the already existing cars as a battery for the whole grid.
Precisely. And that is I think still in the future, because you need a lot of heavy infrastructure investment to do that. So the grid actually needs upgrading so that you have bidirectional energy flows from every outlet. So this is something that won't happen overnight. But you can already do amazing things with just pooling together, aggregating a couple of thousand car batteries, virtually, of course, when we know that they will all be charging overnight in, let's say, southern Sweden. And we can then offer to the grid operator to say, turn those off, the charging process, turn it off for a couple of seconds in order to make sure that you don't run into a brownout or a blackout situation because you see an energy peak approaching. And that's something that we do in a small scale already, but that is something that we believe will play a major role both in this and everything, every iteration on that technology from that. So from just turning off demand and then maybe also playing with bidirectional flows here will be a major part of rolling this infrastructure out across Europe and also across North America and probably globally. And it will be, as you just said, Joe, it will be probably also a major enhancer for rolling out further green energy generation assets, right? Because there you are tied to wind and sun cycles. So storage is key to making that happen. And that's something that is very important to us, both from a idealistic perspective, but also from a business model perspective, because obviously this is something that the grid operator is very interested in. So there is a revenue stream attached to that as well. And then there's some pretty interesting things around, one of the major emitters out there, which is long-haul trucking, electrifying those routes and helping logistics providers do that well. So working with hubs, working with charging schedules, working with route optimization on that. So there's interesting technological aspects to making sure that our supply chains also electrify, which we are also really looking forward to working in.
Let me try my psychic powers here. You've already spoke so highly of California. You'll likely relocate your U.S., your North American headquarters somewhere around there?
Close, but no. We will actually start on the East Coast because of the time difference, right? So first, it will be an office that is, it won't be 100 people from day one. So it won't be self-sustaining really, right? So we want to make sure that there's as much overlap with Europe as possible for the first office. But yes, if we have a second office in the US, it's most likely going to be on the West Coast.
So that pretty much sounds like New York City. Mm-hmm. I see.
No comment.
He's smiling. Very interesting topic. Usually we end with two questions. Usually the questions are you open to talk to new investors? The answer is usually yes. Would you agree to that?
Yes, always. Always be closing, always be fundraising. That's unfortunately how it is.
Yeah. If you want to reach Max directly, go down here in the show notes. There's a link to his LinkedIn profile. And the second question I'm going to attach a little bit because I've read and heard about you, and usually we are talking about, are you looking for talent? And usually the answer is also yes, but you do have quite some interesting takes on company culture and on salary and funding transparency. That's what I heard and read about you guys. Can we talk a little bit about that before we redirect all the people in the last statement to your careers website?
Yeah, very happy. It's super important to us. So we put, and thank you for pulling out that question. It's actually something that we spend quite a bit of energy on. We as a company have committed to complete transparency. So everybody in the organization knows, for example, how much money I make, how many shares I have. I also know that about my peers and about everybody else. If you want to, you can find out exactly how much money we have on the company bank accounts internally, obviously. We find that transparency is a great, it's a great way of preempting discussions, right? So we have transparent salary bands, we have transparent career paths. You won't find yourself in a situation at the water cooler, proverbial water cooler or coffee machine, being upset about somebody else getting something that you haven't gotten, because there's very little flexibility for individual deals, right? On the one mm-hmm. hand, that may be something that deters, but on the other hand, it makes it so much easier and so much clearer, because there's really no way for anybody else to be, pulled out and put in front on somebody else. So, it's been a very successful experiment for us now. So we're now 250 people with full transparency. So we are pretty excited that we have managed to pull it through to this, and we want to keep on doing that. And at the same time, we invest in our offices, so we make sure that these are places that people want to come to work in, and that are in good locations. So we have an office in Copenhagen, in Berlin, in London, in Paris, in Barcelona, in the end, it's a people business. No matter what AI will do for us in the future, it's going to be us who are going to be delivering success for this company, and that means success for yourself and for ourselves. So we very much believe that people are the most important thing we really have.
That are amazing closing words. I was tempted to say amen to that. Everybody who'd like to learn more, you can go down here in the show notes. As we said, there's a link to your private LinkedIn profile, as well as to the career websites. And everybody who's interested in investing in you guys can either reach out to us or directly to you.
Exactly. Please apply. We have many exciting positions.
Great. Awesome. Max, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you as a guest. I would say goodbye in Danish, but I don't know how to do that.
Tag for day.
Tag for day. Okay, learn something new. Maybe I learned something badly pronouncing it. But it was a pleasure having you as a guest and hope to have you back in, let's say, 1 or 2 years when we can talk about your success in North America.
Thank you. Likewise, a pleasure and looking forward.
My pleasure. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.
Liberty's leave policy was tremendous. Having the ability to take 16 weeks off, fully paid to bond with my child, was an incredible experience.
At Liberty Mutual, you can find a career that supports you at every step, even baby steps. We offer up to 16 weeks parental leave for new moms and dads. And because not everyone's pathway to parenthood looks the same, we offer robust fertility, surrogacy, and adoption benefits too. Learn more at libertymutualcareers.com and pursue your tomorrow today.